All right, V for vagina. V is for vengeance.
How different that movie would have been if it was V for vagina instead of V for vendetta.
Instead of V for vendetta. That'd been amazing. V for vagina. All right, vengeance. Wait, I'm Kellen.
I'm Jonathan.
And we are the Spooky Guys.
Spooky Guys.
Sorry, I had a burp coming up. All right, vengeance, a Valentine's Day tragedy. By the time this story ends, two people will be dead. Yeah, that's nice. So,
spoiler alert.
There's only two people in this room. Long before police lights cut through the dark, before courtroom verdicts and prison sentences, before a woman became a name people debated and dissected, there were wedding vows.
Anne Frank.
I knew she'd be back. God damn it. I went to basic training with a dude whose last name was Frank, and I asked if he'd name his kid Anne.
Well, what was his answer?
He didn't get the joke at first. God, I had to explain it to him. It wasn't funny. Promises spoken aloud in front of family and friends. Promises written by hand into cards and folded carefully into drawers. Like underwear? Just kidding.
I mean,
right into his drawers.
His trousers, his pantaloons.
Promises meant to endure exhaustion. Jesus, exhaustion, disappointment, resentment, and time. This story does not begin with violence. It begins with devotion and with the deeply human belief that love, if given fully, will be returned in equal measure.
Nope. I've been divorced twice. I'm proof of that.
Jesus Christ. I've only been divorced once, so.
But mine was from the same woman. Does it count? You better remember.
I don't know which one of you it was, but one of you was really desperate. And one of you was a really hot chick. I can't tell which one, but one of you was a really hot chick, and
fuck
the
yeah.
other was a Mexican.
I was the
man.
Hot chick. Fuck. I was worried for a second there.
All right, so this story. This is the story of Betty Broderick. Betty was born. Elizabeth Ann Biskeglia on November 7th, 1947, into a large Irish Catholic family in New York.
Oh, hoity toity toity. We're Irish Catholic now. Magically delicious.
I was just Catholic.
I'm just a wee little Catholic boy. I'm right here doing the Lord's work in... Where were they?
New York.
In New York City.
Right down here in the Bronx.
Right. I'm in the Bronx. You know, the Bronx is Gaelic for this fucking sucks here.
Wonder what else is Gaelic? My butthole. Get over here.
Oh, he says it and it's fine. I make a joke and you all come after me.
No, I'm sure someone will... Oh, they're both gay!
Oh, I've been jerking off to two gay dudes this whole time?
God damn it!
Fuck!
So, she grew up in a world shaped by structure and certainty, and growing up in a Catholic family, she grew up thinking marriage mattered. Commitment was assumed. Divorce was not discussed casually or without shame, and you worked through the problems, you endured, you stayed. From an early age, that actually sounds a lot like the Mormon church. So, you know, be sweet, pray, obey. From an early age, Betty stood out. She was attractive and intelligent, outspoken and emotional. Hang on.
She stood out. She was attractive where everybody else was fuck ugly.
She doesn't, I mean, she didn't look very attractive in the picture, but.
What year was this?
1947.
Oh, everybody was fuck ugly in the 40s, so she really stood out. Their average is today's beautiful.
So what was their beautiful? Today's
didn't
average?
Didn't exist.
Oh.
Not until...
The handicapped chick drooling
in the
hall.
Not until Audrey Hepburn showed up.
Okay.
Shout out to Audrey Hepburn. If you're still alive, slide in the DMs.
She's outspoken. If you're still alive.
I'm just now being told that she is dead.
Is she?
All right, Ouija board, here we come.
She felt things deeply and reacted strongly. She had a temper and a short tongue. Well, be a bad lesbian, I guess. When provoked, traits that would later be used to define her in the harshest ways possible. But she was also deeply loyal. Once she committed herself to a person, a role, a life, she committed completely. To Betty, loyalty was not passive, it was labor. And labor to her was love. She met Daniel Thomas Broderick III in the late 1960s.
Yeah, you're seeing it.
It's always the ones with the numbers. 10 came from a world shaped by ambition.
There is a trend. There is kind of a common denominator.
Yeah. Just saying.
Yeah.
Obviously not all of them, but a lot of them.
Yeah, most of them.
Anyway.
Enough of them.
Dan came. It's just funny every time it comes up. I'm like, it's the numbers.
The numbers, Mason. What do they mean?
Mason, what does the 3 mean behind his name?
Why is your breath so hot?
And she'll never have to.
You're such a sweet boy. Oh, he's a little boy.
Okay, he just got back from the fires of Mount Doom.
What should be?
Oh, hang on.
This is the story of a girl who drowned the river and cried the whole world. No more. Go. Go. Thank you.
So she met Daniel Thomas Broderick III in the late 1960s.
The 60s?
Yeah.
That's all I have for you. Yeah.
Dan came from a world shaped by ambition and expectation. He was charming, articulate, and intensely focused on success. Dan did not want a quiet or average life. He wanted recognition, he wanted status, and he wanted to win. At the beginning, they fit together very easily. Dan had ambition, Betty had belief. They married in 69, exchanging...
Nice. Yeah, let's fucking go, dude.
Exchanging traditional Catholic vows with the unspoken understanding that those promises were absolutely permanent.
To constantly belittle you and beat you into submission, so help me, Lord. And I promise you to always hide your crimes and your sins. And I promise you
to take every load without complaining. Of laundry, goddammit. Oh,
my bad.
Anyway.
I'll keep your plate full, but your balls empty. So help me, God.
So understanding that those promises were absolutely permanent, better or worse, richer or poorer.
I promise if I don't treat you right, I'll treat you with the left.
Do they part? All the time, the future looked full. Whatever challenges waited for them, they believed they would face them together. Almost immediately, the sacrifices began. Dan enrolled in medical school, and Betty stepped into the role of supporter without hesitation.
Fair, okay.
She worked to cover expenses, managed the house, and adjusted the constant stress that life built around exams, long hours, and uncertainty. When Dan later decided that medicine was not his calling, he pivoted to law school instead, and Betty adjusted as well. Each pivot required more of her. They moved repeatedly following Dan's education and early career wherever opportunity appeared.
So homeboy decides he wants to go to school. Nah, fuck this. Medical school ain't it.
Yeah. And now he's in law school or is a lawyer.
Now he wants to be a lawyer. What was his specialty? Medical malpractice. Huh, weird.
Adjacent. How did he die? Medical malpractice. They moved repeatedly following Dan's education and early career wherever opportunity appeared. Okay. Each move meant starting over, new homes, new doctors, new schools, new routines, and every time Betty absorbed the disruption quietly. Children came quickly. One pregnancy, 9 months isn't, quick, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's the average span of time it takes for a child to be born.
It'd make more sense if it was like, Dan came quickly. Just
kidding. You know what's funny? When people casually talk about trying for kids, in conversation and be like, so we're trying to have a kid.
I know. It's like,
and it's like,
okay, so you're coming inside your wife,
which is like, I get it, but call it what it is. Be like, so he's just fucking dumping loads in me every night. You're like, grandma, we are at the dinner table.
She's like, grandma's like, so anyway, your grandpa came home one day and wanted children, so I just started taking loads left, left and right. Grandma, that was right and left. Shut the fuck up. I did my time.
I did my time. We still fuck now, even. It comes out as powder, so I gotta add a little water to the mix to...
He's a little old, and it's just dust.
Well, you know, one part water to every part cum shot, and right as rain.
And that's why I'm pregnant at 85.
Well, if it happened to that one chick in the Bible, I don't remember her fucking name, Sarah.
My lips drag to the floor, but god damn it, do I make great children.
Except you, ungrateful fucks.
Except for my great-grandchildren with the Tide Pods.
With the Tide Pods. We're like, fuck it, we're putting it in our fucking home next week.
With the Tide Pods and the fucking and the blowjobs.
And the TikToks.
You don't put penises where they don't go.
Back in my day.
It was the asshole or the vagina.
Yeah, if you didn't want God to see your sin, you put it in your butt.
Why do you think I fart and there's no sound?
It just goes... Pwah. And if the wind hits me just right, it whistles like you're blowing over the top of a bottle.
God damn it, Grandpa Dan was hung. Okay.
Anyways, that was a...
Children came quickly, one pregnancy followed another... Eventually, there were five children.
Damn.
Yep. In only 2 years.
Damn.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, fuck, dude. Oh, brother. I was like, that's technically not possible.
That's literally illegal.
Is it?
No, it's two twins and a single. Or a set of twins and a triplet.
What, are you selling mattresses? Fucking.
I got two twins and a triple for $5.99. Shipping and handling not included. There are blood stains. All right. Five children. Betty became the center of gravity for the household. She managed the finances, the schedules, the meals, the schools, the events, the doctor's appointments,
you dumb bitch.
And the endless invisible labor that keeps a family functioning. Dan studied. Dan worked late. Dan focused entirely on becoming successful. And over time... Well, obviously, he still had time to fucking throw it down. He had five kids, my guy.
Yeah, if he didn't... Look, statistically speaking, if they didn't take the time to fuck, he could have taken a second job.
He probably could have been more successful. It's a lot of kids. If he stayed at like two or three, he probably would have been more successful.
But this was the 60s.
I know. All right. They're coming out of those times where they're like, oh no, only four will survive. And there's like 18. Which ones will it be?
Loading a revolver. Which ones are going to live?
Could you imagine living in like the 20s and 30s and you're just playing fucking bingo with your kids' deaths and just waiting? It's like,
pretty much.
We have to have all these kids because we don't know how many will make it. It's like, I was one of 20 and only four of us made it. Hi.
We had to eat the rest. What? I'm sorry?
I've ever heard of the Oregon Trail. Not 1920. Oregon. All right. Dan studied. Dan worked late. Dan focused entirely on becoming successful. Over time, their lives began to take on different shapes. Dan's world expanded outward. Colleagues, mentors, clients, reputation... Betty's world narrowed inward. Children, house, responsibility, routine. For years...
Take a shot of tequila without making a face.
I apologize. I got tagged in something and I thought my sound was off. Carry on.
No, let's hear what you were fucking tagged in. It's more important than
me. It was
me.
My own video.
Oh, really? Come on. Where you take that big drink of water and then stare at the camera?
First of all, it was tequila.
No, I remember that day. You told me to pour the bottle out.
First of all, that was 7 years ago. You weren't in my life then. Were you in my life then? carry on.
For years, Betty told herself this imbalance was only temporary, that once Dan reached the top, things would slow down, that her sacrifices would be acknowledged, and that she would finally be seen. In a practical sense, they were rewarded. Dan became successful. Became a successful medical malpractice attorney.
Fuck off!
I'm not kidding. That's hilarious.
We gotta go.
Known for aggressive litigation and winning large settlements, money followed, comfort followed, prestige followed. The family moved to La Jolla, California.
What, spell it?
L-A space huh, as in J-O-L-L-A.
Hoya.
Oh.
La Jolla.
La Jolla. California.
Can I get a Hoya? it means the jewel California.
An affluent coastal community where wealth was very visible and social standing mattered. But success came with a very big cost. Dan changed. He grew less tolerant of noise, conflict, and emotion. The traits he once accepted in Betty, her intensity, her bluntness, now embarrassed him. He wanted calm, polish, and control. The chaos of the family life became something he would distance himself from rather than engage with.
So he pumps a bunch of kids into her.
Yep.
And then he gets upset about having a bunch of kids.
Valentine's, literally fucking adults in the 60s.
He's just...
We're the greatest generation.
He's just sitting
there... I fucking
there
hate my kids,
with
God
a whiskey and a cigar looking at her. You whore, why'd you let me fuck you so many times? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Dude, I don't... listen, the boomers ruined everything.
Yeah. They were told they were the greatest generation of all time, or their parents were, and they were like, they had, we're children of the greatest generation.
And they had every fucking advantage in the world. And then when they got to the top, they kicked the fucking ladder out from under us so that we couldn't follow lead. And now...
Yeah, and then told us to...
It's because you're
do it the way they did.
Yeah, it's like we fucking can't. They're like, why are you paying so much in rent? You could buy a house cheaper. I was like,
they won't let us.
They won't let us. Well, why? You just got to save up money. I'm paying rent. I can't save money.
Yep.
You don't understand. You fucking idiot.
Our rent isn't $10 a month anymore.
Yeah, it's not a blowjob and a sack of corn like it was back in the fucking 50s. Jesus. Fuck me.
I can't offer my fucking daughter for rent.
Yeah. Jesus. That's why they kept pumping kids out. Be like, well, there's the next month's rent.
Fucking no.
God.
Valentine's Day still came and went. Cards were exchanged. Flowers appeared, but affection thinned. Conversations shortened. Arguments escalated. Dan spent more time at the office. Silence filled the spaces where intimacy once lived.
Yeah, after the fifth kid, really? Intimacy died?
Again, stop. If you didn't have so many fucking kids, you'd probably be fine.
Fucking buy a candle open, cut a hole in it like everybody else. Jesus.
Wear a condom.
Oh yeah, that's
actually an option. That's taking it pretty far.
Yeah, whoa there.
Let's just stay with the grapefruit.
Yeah.
So Betty stayed because love meant staying, because she had invested everything. Because marriage to her was not something you abandoned when it became uncomfortable. What Betty could not see was that while she clung so tightly to the vows, Dan was quietly imagining a different life, one that felt easier, lighter, and free from conflict. By the early 80s, Dan was powerful, respected, admired, and with power came a lot of options. One of those options was a young woman named Linda Colcana. Linda.
Later known for trafficking cocaine. Nobody saw it coming.
Oh, imagine this. She was a legal assistant.
Damn.
At his office. She was in her early 20s. Like, you literally, like, you can't write this shit. You can't make this shit up. Oh, he's fucking his assistant. Ah.
Ooh. To the surprise of fucking no one.
Right.
Also.
How original. Oh, you fucking imbecile.
This just in. Fork found in kitchen. Fucking.
Fucking. Thanks, Captain Hindsight. Or thanks, Captain Obvious.
Oh, fuck, dude.
This just in, you have to shower naked to be clean. Fuck. That's, I don't know. It's just one of those things you look at and it's like, yeah, of course he was. He's staying late at his job with a girl named Linda.
As a legal assistant.
Named Linda. You don't need a legal assistant.
Honestly, at that point, I'd be more upset that he's not fucking her. At that point, I'd be like, babe, what are you doing here?
Oh, you have an assistant?
Oh, you got no game? Nice. You don't pull bitches?
Yeah. You're your best friend's law firm. He's like, yeah, I have an assistant. You're like, nice. He's like, hey, Cameron, can you come in here, please? Cameron.
Nice.
A guy comes in. You're like, he leaves, like, Cameron's on a hot shake, you're fucking? He's like, dude, I'm married. My assistant's a guy. You're a lawyer.
Yeah, this is basically a hall pass.
Yeah, you're a successful lawyer.
Yeah, well, sorry. Not successful, because you're not fucking a hot secretary.
Yeah. Friendship over! Yeah,
I thought we were cool, dude. I thought we were homies. You're telling me you're out here not fucking?
Yeah. You're not my lawyer anymore. Yeah. I'm going across the street where they fuck bitches.
Yeah, I'm going to Franklin and Franklin across the way.
They get bitches and money, yeah. Not just money.
Mm. Yeah, I want a lawyer that I know is not just going to fuck the prosecution, but is going to fuck something else that moves, all right? The 60s were a really weird time. The 60s were all about how much hog you could slay. This is the 80s,
too, so.
The 60s, 70s, and 80s. Lawless times.
Even the 90s, man. Like the way our parents dressed us.
Dude, yeah.
And then
the big old windbreakers.
Whatever the fuck we wanted. Like my older brother and I used to shoot arrows in the air. Like arrow roulette.
I worry about you. I'm like, every time you tell me about your childhood, I get a little bit sadder.
Why?
Because you tell
That's
me.
It's not all sad. That part's not sad. Just because you grew up, like, you were pretty babied, right? Can this go higher?
Yeah. This pivots up.
Oh.
There you go.
Oh, no. It's not going
anywhere. You just got to pivot it up.
It's not going anywhere. It's not open. Frodo!
Let's put it in here because I'm done with these.
Mm-mm. Oh, he's a good boy.
You can have one more chippy.
All right.
I'm going to kiss your snoop. I'm going to kiss your snoop. There you go. He licked the inside of my mouth.
Linda worked as a legal assistant in Dan's office. She was in her early 20s, decades younger than Dan. Nice. Nice.
Now, also, we just want to...
This is a joke.
Yeah, I was going to say, I also want to just say, it's a bit.
I do not
condone cheating in any way, shape, or form. It is fucking atrocious.
Hate it, and I actually think people need to be lynched and killed for it to make examples of.
But. Okay, all right, well, hold on. Wait a minute.
This is my personal view, because I despise cheaters.
Yeah.
But for the bit, it's hilarious, because, you know, so don't come at me.
So anyways.
She represents something that Benny could never be again in his eyes.
A virgin.
Uncomplicated admiration.
Oh.
So, yeah. Just childless, I suppose. But that's his fault! It's your fault, Dan! So Linda listened attentively. She agreed readily. Mm. She did not argue about the past or challenge her version of events. The line between professional and personal blurred very quietly. There was no dramatic revelation, no confession that tore everything open at once. The emotional separation happened first, long before anything was acknowledged out loud. Betty sensed the drift and she confronted Dan about it, but he denied it completely. Again and again, he told her that she was just being jealous and paranoid and unstable.
Just mid-plow. You're fucking crazy, baby.
Yeah, you're crazy. I'm not doing any. I'm at the gym.
No, I'm just, I'm in a golf tournament. We're just clapping.
Oh, daddy.
It's a children's golf tournament.
Oh, no, that was Charles. You remember Charles from The Office? He calls me Danny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm fucking the secretary.
No, you can't own it. He just fucking went at her for being paranoid.
He denied it.
He you psycho bitch.
Nothing's more gaslighting than knowing, like, knowing
my ex did that, cheated, and then gaslighted the fuck out of me. Yeah. So you're paranoid. You're unstable.
You're fucking somebody.
Psycho bitch. Yeah.
I bet the kids aren't even mine.
And he told others the same thing. Colleagues, friends, attorneys. Slowly the narrative formed around Betty and that she was crazy. She was being difficult. She was emotional. And she was violent. Mm. Once that label stuck, everything else became evidence. By 1985, Dan moved out of the family home. Did you growl at him?
I said go lay down.
Oh.
Who would fucking growl at a dog? I mean, I would growl at a dog, but not Frodo. Frodo's a sweet boy.
He framed the separation not as betrayal, but as necessity. Living with Betty, he claimed, had become impossible. The marriage was not ending because he had broken it. It was ending because she was broken. He filed for divorce. For Betty, the filing felt like
She's got all this baggage, and she's got all these kids. They're your kids. Like, I know, they're the worst.
They're the worst. Oh, God.
Going back to...
It's true, but yeah. It's sad. It's true.
That's one thing, too, that I saw coming, but I didn't like it, in Umbrella Academy, going back to the conversation from the previous episode, was Five's relationship with, what's-her-face, number two's wife.
It was the mannequin?
No, when they were in the tunnels, and they were gone for, like, 7 years.
Yeah. They went into the time tunnels or whatever and got lost.
And I'm like, I get it.
Oh, yeah, he did.
But,
they both did age, and they were...
They were there for 7 years.
That's a long time. And you don't know what anyone else is doing.
No, because it was only a couple hours for them back in the regular timeline. But they were down there for 7 years.
Well, that's why Diego was so mad.
Yeah.
About it. They came back and they're like, he had like a full beard, everything. They're like, oh, we found our way out. And they're like,
he didn't have a beard. No, because she shaved him.
Oh, yeah, right. Like, they had found their way out and they cleaned
the... It was a whole thing. But, like, circumstantially...
She's, like, shaving him.
But circumstantially different. Because, like, you guys don't know if you're going to get out of here or not. You're alone. You need a little bit of human companionship. I kind of get that.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand. It's like...
She was fucking... Kudos. It's probably
like... I am 70 in a 12-year-old's body.
He wasn't 12 then.
No, he was like 15 or 16.
No, he was older. Like he was about...
Oh, wait, because there was a time jump between the seasons, and then they're in there for 7.
So he's like 22, then they're for 7, so he's almost in his 30s.
Yeah, which in real life, he is in his 30s, which doesn't look hilarious.
Yeah. I followed them all on Instagram in the hopes that one of them would follow me back. Hasn't happened yet.
Do you have more followers than any of them?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Which one?
I don't want to say. I don't want to call. I'll show you later. There's just one or two that I have more than. Or even if they did like an Umbrella Academy animated show.
That'd be cool.
Have them voice them?
Yeah.
Why not?
Dan had money, composure, and attorneys. Betty had debt, fear, and grief.
And children.
The divorce process was brutal. Legal fees mounted. Courtrooms replaced kitchens.
What?
Why? Custody battles followed.
Hey, can you go get me a glass of water?
Sorry,
they're in the middle of a... Yeah, in the middle of a disposition.
Can I have a sandwich? Yeah, here, I'll make you a sandwich. He hands it. It's like paper with mayonnaise on it.
These are two... This one's for insurance fraud, and this is a intellectual property infringement case. But like,
this is a death record for Dad. He's not dead yet.
And it's dated for 9 months from now. I'll take that.
So... Motherhood had been her only identity, and without it, the ground beneath her collapsed. So she lost the custody of her children completely.
Oh, so he did want the kids. Okay.
Yeah.
That's news to me.
Phone calls were very limited. I think it's just him going after her is all it was.
Yeah, because phone calls were like $37 a minute back then.
Visits were regulated. Holidays became negotiations. She watched other people step into the roles that she believed were hers by right of sacrifice. Dan remarried in 89. Linda is who he did marry. Linda moved into a large home in San Diego, a home Betty knew very well. The symbolism was devastating because Linda was now living the life that Betty believed she had earned. Sleeping beside the man she supported through all the years of struggle and raising the children that Betty felt were being taken away from her.
Oof.
The replacement was complete. Betty unraveled publicly. She called. She confronted. She left messages filled with rage and grief. Each outburst was documented. Each emotional reaction reinforced the narrative already attached to her name. Restraining orders followed. Law enforcement intervened when necessary, but nothing rose to the level of criminal action. The system functioned exactly as designed, but emotionally, Betty believed justice had completely failed her. There would be no apology, no acknowledgement, no reckoning. Her identity, wife, supporter, mother, had been shipped away. Had been stripped away legally and replaced seamlessly. Over time, hope disappeared, and what remained was bitterness that hardened into a certainty.
Into the long cock of the law.
This was no longer about fairness. It was no longer about reconcile. It became about ending the story on her terms. In the early morning hours of November 5th, 1989, I don't like the way this is going. Before dawn softened the edges of the night, Betty Broderick got into her car and drove to Dan and Linda's home in San Diego. The streets were quiet and the world was still asleep. There was no signs of forced entry. Betty knew how to get inside. That detail would later unsettle investigators. This was not a break-in. This was an arrival. She carried a revolver that belonged to one of her children. The weight of the gun felt final, and inside the house, the silence was complete. Dan and Linda were asleep in their bedroom, unaware that years of resentment and rage had condensed into this moment, and what happened next unfolded very quickly. There was no argument. There was no confrontation. There was no final exchange of words. Just gunfire. Dan and Linda were struck as they slept. The violence was abrupt and decisive. Later, Betty would claim that she did not intend to kill them, only to hurt and scare them. But intention dissolves into the face of reality. She brought a loaded weapon into a sleeping home. Afterward, she left very calmly. She didn't linger. She didn't scream. She got into her car and drove away. Later that morning, Dan and Linda Broderick were found dead in their bed, and the news shocked the community. This wasn't a random crime. It was an intimate, personal, intimate, personal, and layered with years of public conflict. Betty was arrested without incident. She did not deny any. She did not deny responsibility.
I mean, you really can't at that point in time. Like, you can.
I know.
Try.
She should have made it look like a break-in. Jesus.
Her trial. Amateur.
I know. Her trial captured public attention. The first trial ended in a hung jury. Jurors could not agree on whether this was first-degree murder or the tragic collapse of a woman emotionally destroyed by years of erasure. Public opinion fractured sharply, and the second trial ended in conviction. Betty Broderick was found guilty on two counts of second-degree murder and sentenced to 32 years to life in prison.
Remind me, because it's just one of those things where it confuses me every time I hear about it. Is the higher the degree worse or the lower the degree worse?
First degree murder is the worst.
Okay.
Because it's first degree, second degree, and then third degree is like manslaughter.
Okay.
So first degree is there was an intention, there was plan, there was this. Second degree is like you didn't necessarily mean to,
But you still.
But you were like in an argument and you shot them.
Yeah.
Or
they call like it's what they call like a crime of passion or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's like unintentional homicide, yeah. And then manslaughter or third degree murder.
When it's accidental. Is like
I ran someone over with my car because they ran out in the street.
Right.
That's manslaughter. I can get charged with manslaughter.
I personally don't think people should be getting charged with manslaughter.
No?
Not for those kind of circumstances like that.
What about the guy from Suite Life of Zack and Cody?
I beg your pardon? What?
Yeah, the Mr. Mosby. Right?
I don't... What did he do?
He killed someone. He got manslaughter charges in the 90s.
It depends on the circumstance. If it was like he was driving and somebody came up from between cars and got struck, I think he should not be at fault for that. Now, if he's driving and somebody's crossing at a crosswalk and he runs him over, well, then he's at fault for that.
But if he has a green light, is he still at fault?
No. If somebody crossed...
In Montana...
Montana's wrong. Everything Montana does is wrong. I'll argue that every day of the week.
I'll agree with, like... The stand your ground laws.
The fact that we've got people with 9+ DUIs still legally driving.
Hey, it's just a rite of passage.
Jesus Christ.
Welcome to an Irish state. I'm just kidding.
It's not you. We're not going to argue.
I'm just playing.
But, you know, I think if it's accidental, like accidental discharge of a weapon, no. Like that's a manslaughter charge. But... Somebody steps out in between cars and you fucking had no time to respond and stop it. Like, how severe is a manslaughter charge? Is it like you're going away for 5 to 10?
Depending on how bad it was.
Yeah, I'd be like, no. Now, if you're being an asshole, you're not paying attention, you ram into the back of somebody's parked car. No, that's on you.
Well, that'd still be considered manslaughter because it's still accidental. That is not first degree murder for just ramming into the back. Unless you planned on doing it.
If it's premeditated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unless you're like, there's that bitch.
There's people like watching some videos of people driving and like just plowing into the back of somebody's car going full speed. I'm like, how?
Yeah. Like, why weren't you? You didn't even try.
You didn't. No attempts. No attempts. If I know.
And then they seem surprised, too, that they were there. I'm like, I literally watched that come at you. For the last 10 seconds of this video, all you had to do was
swerve. At the very least, swerve.
Not even. It's just a nice little...
Yeah.
Switch lanes a little bit and come back in.
There was one video. I'll have to show it to you. But he's clearly in a truck. And he's coming up on a stopped car on like a highway. But he veers left.
It's a Prius. You're like, it's clearly a very large pickup.
It's all crammed inside. But he goes over to the left shoulder to get around this car. And immediately afterwards, this semi, whose brakes didn't work, comes plowing through and just rams through everybody.
Yeah.
And you hear the lady in the car be like, is that why you pulled over the side? Yep, that's why I pulled over.
Oh, I've just seen that one.
Really
yeah.
calm.
Yep, that's why I pulled over. All right.
Never mind, 37 dead.
5 children were left behind. Yeah. And he gets manslaughtered. Their father was dead, their stepmother was dead, and their mother was incarcerated.
Damn.
The cost of vengeance was permanent. In prison, Betty remained defiant. She expressed little remorse, not because she denied the deaths, but because she believed that the events were inevitable. The courts wanted acknowledgement of wrongdoing, but Betty wanted acknowledgement of her suffering, and neither gave way. This case continues to disturb because it resists simple conclusions. It is not a story of clear villains or heroes. It is a story of devotion, punished, of endurance dismissed, of love that curdled into something dangerous. Valentine's Day, in this context, becomes something else entirely. Not romance, not celebration, but a warning.
Damn.
Honestly, there's nothing more romantic than killing somebody for someone you love. I'm just kidding. I'm just playing.
Flowers?
You can write him a poem.
I was a poems guy. Still am a poems guy.
I wrote Lacey a poem this year.
Roses are red, violets are blue.
You're really cute.
Let me eat you.
Let me come in you.
It's weird. You send me the same poem. Oh, you wanted me to proofread it. Got it. Yeah, my bad. Sorry.
Why'd you put Lacey here? Because it's for her.
Oh, yeah. No, that makes sense.
Well, I'll read over it.
Well, it's atrocious and I hate it. And I hope you both die. I know where you guys sleep at night. It's fine. Yeah, these are just giving me ideas. If I can't have you, no, I can't. Nobody can. Fucking love.
What's the last? I think the last one's evil. Hang on. I can tell everybody. So because these episodes, I might just publish the one today, just or tomorrow for shits and giggles, and then Wednesday, just so there's a break in between the two.
Okay.
And then I think the last one is evil. The vampire clan.
Huh.
Yeah.
Is that clan with a C or a K? Just checking.
C.
Okay.
Capital C.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay.
Ooh, this one's a longer one. Those two we did were only 5 pages each, and this one's 8.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. These two, so far, we're at 45 minutes with this one as well.
Oh, okay. No. Well, that's good timing because I got to start getting ready for work soon.
Yeah, so we'll just end it there. So, thanks for listening. And remember that if you love somebody.
No, you don't.
Kill them in your sleep.
Kill them in your sleep. If you love someone so much and they leave you, kill them and their significant other. Anything else? Don't pump her full of kids and then get mad at her for it.
Yeah.
That's fucking ridiculous.
That's silly. Fucking men. They're the worst.
Yeah, they are.
I identify.
Honestly, I find mothers' bodies way more attractive. So.
Yeah.
I know someone with numbers that doesn't. So anyway. I'm Kellen. And you know, we're the Spooky Guys. Spooky and I hope you guys stay spooky and you review us and like us and message us. I want to do some listener stories. So if you have like a story about getting robbed or mugged or beat up, or you had a really weird sexual experience, or
a paranormal story,
yeah, or a murder, I don't fucking care. Just
he's. I don't know. Hey, let me.
I just want
to
do.
Can I talk to you guys for a second? Hey, hold on. I'm gonna take you up here. Yeah, Kellen's been really weird about this, and if you guys could do this for him, that'd be great. He's really getting weird about it. I watched him the other day cry openly into a notebook that it had just written over the top of it listener stories, and it was blank, and it's getting kind of fucking pathetic. So if you guys could just send a little something, that'd be great.
No, it's not that bad.
Oh, you're here. Hey, sorry. I was just having a conversation with our audience. Folks, leave us a message. Leave us an email. Send us an Instagram DM. Doesn't matter. Leave us a comment. We appreciate you guys. We'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, stay spooky.
And fuck yourselves.
Bye.
Ah, good stretch.